I'm just going to read from 2 Corinthians 7, 4 through 7. This won't be a long Sunday message, don't worry. But I do believe that God wants to say something to us before we depart. This is what the author writes. I have spoken to you with great frankness. I take pride in you. I'm greatly encouraged. In all of our troubles, my joy knows no bounds. For when we came into Macedonia, we had no rest, but we were harassed at every turn. Conflicts on the outside, fears within. But God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort you had given him. What we find in this passage is Paul is worn down, and he's tired, and he's discouraged, and he's wondering if he could go on. And he shows up to Macedonia, and he's beaten down, he's afraid, he's worn down, but something happens here in Macedonia in this passage. Titus shows up. When Titus shows up, something changes. Paul says, I'm greatly encouraged. I'm comforted. I know a joy that knows no bounds. In other words, had it not been for Titus, Paul wouldn't have gotten the comfort and the encouragement and the strength that he needed to go on. And today I want to ask you, maybe you've experienced it this weekend or sometime in your life. Can you think of a time in your life or a moment in your life where had it not been for that person, you don't know if you would have continued on? You don't know if you would have made it. Had it not been for the presence of that person, you don't know how you would have carried on. Had it not been for the words of that person that you needed to hear, you wouldn't be who you are here today. In Hebrews 10, 24 through 25, passage we've been coming to again and again, Paul says, let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds, not giving up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. And usually we stop there, but I want you to pay attention to what he says next. But encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. Paul's like, don't give up meeting and gathering together as some are in the habit of doing. Don't stop getting together, but why? We see it right here in the second part. He says, what's going on when they meet? What's happening when they get together? Are they just doing Bible study? Are they just worshiping? Are they just breaking bread? Are they just listening to teachings and sermons? It says they're encouraging one another. And I think one of the things that we've kind of lost in the modern day church era is, you know, we come in, we get what we want to get, and we go out. And I think one of the things we don't do often enough anymore is intentionally practice encouragement. When we get together on Sundays, are people leaving encouraged? When we get together in our community groups, are people leaving encouraged? When you take a church member out to lunch, are they leaving encouraged? And I think one of the healthy marks of engagement in the early church was that people were leaving the gathering encouraged. And I love how this wasn't just the responsibility of the apostles or the teachers or the pastors or the worship leader. It was the responsibility of every single church member to make sure that people left encouraged. This unknown, I mean, a lot of people do know, but he was relatively a small minor character compared to Paul. This guy Titus comes in and encourages one of the giants of faith. Now, I want to talk about what encouragement is in the Bible. That word encourage is actually a compound word. The prefix en, meaning to put into, and the word courage, which could also mean confidence or bravery or strength. And so I love to think of it this way. That word encourage literally means to put courage into someone, to put strength into someone, to put confidence back into someone. You might be asking, Pastor Mickey, why do we need courage? You know, we need courage every single day. We need courage to wake up in the morning. We need courage to get up and try again. We need courage to continue on. Some of us, we need courage to stay optimistic and stay hopeful. We need courage to trust in God after disappointment after disappointment. And it says when Titus encouraged Paul, it wasn't just shallow pep talk. It wasn't just, hey, you could do it. God's on your side. You got this, bro. He was putting courage back into Paul. Courage to continue doing the work of God. Strength to continue the mission. It was, if we hope to be the people that God has called us to be, we need people putting courage back into us again and again and again. You know, I was just thinking last night after we finished our session, we did our campfire, and I went back to my bed. I was just... I don't know. I hope you don't think this weird, but I think about you guys sometimes before I go to sleep, and I just think about how blessed I am by the flock and the community that we have. And I don't know if you know this, but y'all put courage back into me as your pastor again and again. Every time I meet with someone and they tell me how this community was just what they needed for this season of their life, that puts courage back into me to continue on. Every time I get that text message or word of encouragement, especially after I bomb a sermon saying, that's exactly what I needed to hear, you put courage back into me to do this thing again. Every time I see y'all love on one another and be there for one another, pray for one another, it puts courage back into my heart. And we need people in our lives to put the courage back into us so that we can do what God's called us to do and be who God's called us to be. Encouragement is what the gospel feels like as it moves from one believer to another. It's the good news of the gospel made alive in our senses. It's something we tangibly experience through community. And more importantly, it's how we experience God through one another. Listen, I might not be able to physically feel the arms of God wrap around me again, but I feel it through the hug of a friend. I might not be able to hear the audible voice of God speaking to me, but I hear it through the kind words of my neighbor. Encouragement is love in motion. And I say it again and again, the last church I was at, one of my favorite things after service was to run up to the big mamas who would hug us because it was a pretty multi-generational church. And honestly, there's nothing better than the hug of a big mama that just hugs you and squeezes you and you burrow into their arms. And I remember feeling the tangible presence and love of God in just a hug. We can be that to one another, whether it be physically or through our words. We can encourage one another to put courage back into us to face life once again. And so I want to just highlight three ways that encouragement is expressed in belonging and community and what it feels like. Number one, encouragement feels like comfort. 2 Corinthians 7:7 says, but God who comforts the downcast comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort you had given him. The question I want you to ask is, who are those that need comforting in your life right now? Who are those, even in this community, you know, you've shared your lives with one another. Who are those in this community that need comfort to continue on? The one who's tired from a long week at work, the one who's grieving the loss of a family member, the one who's just lost their job, the one who's depressed and doesn't know why, the one who's feeling purposeless and directionless in life, the one who's lonely. There are people all around us who are in need of comfort. And if we're to be honest with ourselves, sometimes we're way too busy or too comfortable to step outside of ourselves and offer comfort to those who need it. It says Paul was comforted by the presence of Titus. His presence changed something. And I want to ask you something. Do you make your presence count? Like, can it be said when Taylor walks into the room that his presence changes the atmosphere, that when you talk with Caroline, that you feel lifted up, that when you sit with Nathan, that you feel refreshed? Or are you in and out so quick that your presence doesn't make much of a difference at all? We have to open our hearts and our eyes to those around us who need comfort. And I'm not asking you to be like me, like positive, encouraging, K-Love style, Mickey Chose, Enneagram type 7 ENFP. I'm not asking you to be a bubbly version of myself. I'm just saying, make some effort. Open your eyes and your heart to the people around you and the people that are in need of comfort. You know, one of my favorite pastors once said, one of the most powerful things you can offer to someone is the honest question, how are you doing? And I remember I had, you know, you have some friends. My eyes aren't big enough to do this, but some friends, when you look in their eyes and they just say, how are you doing? Like, you just break down. You know what I mean? Like, when I say, how are you doing? You're like, oh, I'm doing okay. But there's those people that have those deep ocean eyes. Like, when they look at you and they ask, how are you doing? You know they mean it. I think there's something powerful about asking each other, like really asking each other, how are you doing? And being willing to offer the comfort that people need. Number two, encouragement sounds like words of affirmation. In 1 Thessalonians 5, 20-11, he died for us so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live together with him. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up just as in fact you are doing. Just like what you did last night, what were we doing? We were offering words of affirmation that build each other up. And I've learned that nothing really builds up or tears down quite like the words that we speak. You know, you might have heard the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's absolute BS, right? We all know it's true because the bloody nose I got when Jerwin Bebe punched me in first grade healed, but I'm still dealing with the wounds that I received when I was a kid from the words that I heard from the people that I love and trusted. Words are powerful. They have the capacity for life or for death. And encouragement sounds like speaking life into someone. To pinpoint what is God doing or what is God saying in this person's life and speaking into their destiny, into their personhood, in their identity. Encouragement sounds like affirming who God made someone else to be. I love that Jesus didn't use his words telling people what they already knew. I find most of the words that we speak to one another is just telling people what they already know. People already know they're messed up. People already know they're having a hard time. People already know the situations that they're in. But we have the opportunity to tell people something that they don't know. To give them something other than the words or names they've been receiving from the world around them. To tell them something better. Do you use your words to build others up, to affirm people's God-given identities and destinies? And the last thing, encouragement looks like needs being met. Acts 2:44-45. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Are you close enough to people to know what's going on in their lives? To know their needs and desires? To know their struggles? And I think in our individualistic society in America, your problem is your problem and my problem is my problem. But in the early church, if you saw someone with a need in the community, it wasn't just their problem anymore. It was yours. In other words, we're not okay until everyone's okay. Now, I hope, you know, this weekend we did life maps and we did a lot of sharing. But I think there's a unique opportunity when we get together like this, where we're able to dive deeper into people's stories and to hear, maybe they might not say it outright, but to hear some of the needs of our community. And I hope if you did hear some of those things, that you would follow up and that you would be the continuing presence of comfort and need for that person in their lives. I once heard it said that the three most important questions that you can ask in our mission to love the world is, do you love God? Do you love your neighbor? And do you mind if I ask them? And it's easy to say we love God and love others, but what would those closest to us actually say? Would they be able to say, Mickey loves me with all of his heart? Would they be able to say, Toby, man, Toby's got my back? Would they be able to say, you know, Hannah has me in the thick of the dark things that I'm going through. I know that she'll be there for me. I shared this a few years ago, but I was sitting with a mentor of mine, and we were talking about this Korean word, noonchi. Have you guys heard of it? You know, I'm like the worst at Korean, so I hope I'm pronouncing it right. But noonchi is like a really unique word specific to the Korean language. It's not really quite any word like it in any other context. And it's really hard to capture what it fully means, but I'm doing my best shot at it. Noonchi is like the subtle art of gauging other people's moods or emotions. We might call it EQ or emotional intelligence or the ability to read a room. It's almost like a sixth sense. It's a social sensitivity to what others are communicating indirectly. So it's the unspoken things. It's the not obvious things. And noonchi, a good example might be, you know, you're out with a friend after work and you notice they seem really tired, but you had plans to watch a movie. Someone with noonchi might notice that and say, hey, after dinner, let's just call it a night. I feel like we're a little bit tired, and so we can just go home and rest. Maybe we can take a rain check. A good example of someone without noonchi might be, you know, you're sitting with a group of friends, and that one person makes that inappropriate joke that makes everyone uncomfortable, and no one's laughing, but that person thinks they told the funniest joke in the world. That's a lack of noonchi. And what my mentor was proposing when we were talking about noonchi was that one of the biggest problems in our churches today is that we've lost the subtle art of noonchi. We don't notice the person sitting by themselves, intimidated, afraid to start a conversation. We don't sense when someone is feeling low or in need of encouragement. We don't notice the person overwhelmed, the person in pain, the person feeling left out. We don't see the person who needs help. And as a result, we're constantly missing opportunities to love and encourage people right where they need it the most. Maybe what we don't need in the church is more programs or altar calls or community groups. Maybe what we need is more noonchi. Maybe what we need is that sensitivity to the Spirit, to see the one who needs our presence, to read the room and see the one who needs our prayers, who needs our encouragement, who needs courage just to make it through the week, who needs courage to start that endeavor that they've been dreaming to start, to put courage back into people who are heading into broken relationships or hard situations. Maybe what we need to recapture in the church is Nucci. And I just want to say, I feel like we do this really well. You know, Krista, after Sunday, when we go home, we always rave about some of y'all that were really highlighted to us. We have our own championship belt at home. We just crown the person, the servant of Sunday. I don't know. But one thing that we always notice about Isaiah is, like, you know, we have a lot that we need to pack up with kids and stuff, and so many of y'all help us, like Steph and Soap and John, but Isaiah always comes up to Krista and asks, is there anything I can help carry with you to the car? Nucci. You know, Krista's not saying, hey, I need help, but he notices a need. He notices the subtle art of reading the room and seeing who's in need, and I feel like some of y'all do that with one another and for us, and that's what we need more of. We can all think of that person in our lives. Every time we get together with them, we walk away encouraged, lifted up, strengthened, and inspired. Hi, Zion, I love you. What if we took it upon ourselves to be that person for someone else? What if our church reflected the kind of encouragement that characterized the early church? You know, the words that you receive this weekend, they're going to require a lot of courage. And you can't do it alone. You don't have enough courage or strength on your own. That's why God has placed us in community. I really believe that you can't fulfill your destiny until you find your people. Why? It's because God's hidden pieces of our destiny, our calling, and our identity in the people that He's surrounded us with. And unless we open our lives up to each other, unless we're able to encourage one another the way the early church did, we'll never be that all that God has called us to be and do all that God has called us to do. And so for this final response, I want us to close our eyes and I want us to reflect on this word Nucci. I want us to reflect on what God has done this weekend, how God has moved. I want us to reflect on the ways that we can embody this encouragement even as we depart from this place. What are the ways that you can continue embodying this for the people in your lives? What are the ways that you can continue doing exactly what we've been doing at this camp, speaking life into one another, speaking words of affirmation, offering comfort, meeting needs? I think retreats are galvanizing moments. Weekends like this are like movement starters, momentum builders. And I feel like one thing that we can bring back to our church when we go back home is Nucci. When we go back home, that we would look for the one who is struggling and encourage them. We would look for the one who needs comfort and comfort them. We would look for the one in need and help them. We would look for the one in need of encouragement and lift them up with our words, that we would be what Titus was to Paul. I pray right now, God, that your sons and daughters here in this room would be activated and sent forth as Titus is, back into their contacts, back into our church community, back into their workplace, back into their houses and homes, back into their relationships, back into every single place that you've called them to be. We go forth from here. Let us be agents of encouragement, putting courage back into people to carry on. But I do want to pray for one more thing before we close. I feel like there are some of you here in this room, you're hearing this, but you're thinking, I don't have any courage to give because I need it myself. If you are in need of encouragement right now, I'm not going to have people open their eyes, but I do want you to just lift your hand with every eye closed, and I want us to pray specifically for you. If you're in need of courage to just go back into life and do what God's called you to do and be who God's called you to be, I want you to just lift your hand for one moment just so I can see you. Maybe it's a word you received during this camp. Maybe it's a season of life you're in. Okay, I see those hands. You can put it down. Right now, God, I just pray for those who are in need of courage right now. For those who are in need of that kind of strength and comfort. For those who are in need of your provision and your love. I pray that you would cover them right now in your encouragement. Even right now as we pray, even as we depart from this place, would you fill them with your courage? Would you fill them with your strength? Would you fill them with your love? I pray that you would allow them to step back into their context, refreshed. Right now, I pray for every single person that needs that courage. God, would you pour it out upon them right now? And would you surround them with people that will rally them on as they continue in the work that you've called them to do and the people that you've called them to be? Love you and honor you in Jesus' name.